Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, that was fun in a kind of a limited way. I don't always know how much fun I have commentating on time trials, but
you
Team Time Trial was something
were
different.
Willing the rain on.
I was.
I think you said about three or four times, is it raining? Is it raining?
Yeah, this wasn't on camera, on microphone, was it? This was
no.
Like when we weren't recording. I think the phrase
you
I used was,
manifested it.
How annoying, no one slapped down yet. And in fact, no one did slap down.
No one did slap down, even with the unexpected rain. So you were very disappointed by that, which I was a bit disgusted by, Ned.
I know. Well, I think that's the ex-rider thing, isn't it? It's the kind of whole, well, you can't say that. That crosses
the line.
That crosses the line.
I bet that's what they're saying in the Netflix production the whole time. Why is no one crashing?
Yeah.
We need more crashes.
Yeah.
You should go and work with them. Oh, no, don't.
Yeah. Oh, actually, talking of which, I had had a Twitter exchange late last night with Johan Brunel.
Did you? No way. Why? What?
It wasn't. Yeah, it could have got feisty if I got back in again. But he posted something about there's nothing more annoying, like in the world, than
commentators who don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, basically. Well, yeah, but quite specifically, it wasn't so much commentators who don't know what they're talking about. It's people who've never ridden a bike.
Ah, so basically, keyboard pundits.
And this, do you know what?
Keyboard experts.
Yeah, this took me back to. This was one of the reasons why I left football, because I lost track of the numbers of times that old school football managers like Gordon Strachan would say to you, "Have you ever played the game, son?" Do you know what I mean? Like, put you down. How dare you offer an opinion?
I did. I was a kid. Good to play football all the time. Lunchtime,
yeah, exactly.
Off school.
Yeah, but you know, like literally in a footballer's football manager's head, you know, it doesn't matter if they've got 60,000 fans.
Yeah,
all of whom pay their wages. You know, they think that none of the opinions of the 60,000 fans are valid. Right.
I think all Schlug opinions are valid.
Yeah, some of them are laughable.
Some of them are laughable.
But some of your opinions are laughable.
That's true.
And you were in the game. You did play the game.
I did race bikes.
Yeah. Anyway, so he posted this. And he's clearly read something. But then he did that thing where you do a kind of veiled complaint where it's anonymous, you know?
You can come in if you want.
Podcast audience.
Yeah. Live podcast audience.
Podcast audience.
Got Matt and Mark here.
Matt and Mark. Who we'll hear from in a minute.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so he did that thing. So it's like he's obviously something's annoyed him about something that someone said. And
was it Helmet Gate? Was he kind of going on that
I
one?
Literally don't know what the
so
issue was.
So you didn't
was,
even go into the thread? You
I didn't go into the thread, but I said, what did I say? I can't remember. But I said
it's
something
there,
like,
it's there, by TV.
Well, my phone. Oh, okay, I'll read out what I said. But what was quite funny was that Adam Blythe had gone, mate, I raced a bike. And so Blythe had obviously thought
it
related to him. And I don't know if it did. I doubt it did. Because the whole point was, you know, like, the whole point was...
But maybe Blythe just presumed that Brunel had been watching and listening to him because he must have obviously felt that there was something that Blythe had said.
Yeah,
then.
But then again, Brunel made the specific point of people... So, okay, let me do it. Johan Brunel, there's nothing more annoying than listening to armchair directors who never posed their ass on a bike seat. Posed their ass on a bike seat and are completely clueless about what a cyclist really feels in the heat of a bike race. Talk as if they were experts on pro cycling and criticise cyclists and team directors. Right? So Blythe had a bit of an exchange and Johan went, no, not you, mate. It's not listening to you. And then Matt went, oh, I'm
sorry. And then about him.
Matt Rendell chipped in as well.
Oh, God.
Saying, oh, I'm sorry. Like that. And Johan said, no, not you, Matt. You're really going, you know, so I thought, I wonder if I'll get the no, not you sort of like thing. So I said to him, people care, feel, think, form opinions about bike races and bike races. It's a public spectacle, a public forum, and has been since it started in the 19th century. The alternative to this is no racing, no interest, nothing. This is just my opinion as an armchair director.
Oh, you went in double down.
And he said, of course, Ned. That's completely normal, and I applaud that. And then he said, everyone has their opinion, and I respect that. I'm talking about people who criticise, judge, condemn, mock, and call themselves experts while being utterly clueless.
I was going to say, I was very zen last night.
It was funny. It was funny. Yeah. I thought I'd just leave it at that, because you don't really want to get in a Twitter war with Johan Brunel. That's not a way of...
Because it might also rope in Lance.
Yeah, and then it could go like... Could go, well, that would be nuclear, wouldn't it? Like,
nuclear.
Yeah, but that was...
So how many nationalities do UAE have?
19, David.
19. That was part of our pre-commentary game, wasn't it?
Yeah, try and list them all. Mm. And there was some... What was the most random one?
Mexico
was the most random. I think you're right. Yeah. And then we had some discussion as to whether or not Poland was a core European country, which I thought was quite interesting geopolitically. You slightly dismissed Poland.
Yes, but I didn't dismiss it.
You were trying to give me a hint.
I should have.
You went core European.
I meant core geographically, right in the central core.
Yeah, and I said Poland, and you went, no, core. And I went German. And now I've forgotten that Niels Pollitt.
Okay. And Switzerland.
Switzerland, yeah.
That's Austria.
Yeah. It's in the UCI rules, isn't it, that every single team has to have one Swiss rider and one Austrian rider. Seems to be the way.
Doesn't it?
They're very core like that, aren't they? They're like the glue. And they're often quite boring.
Yeah, well, they've got
boring riders.
Well, they kind of just they live up to their stereotype, don't they?
Yeah, they're a little bit Grosschartner, a little bit.
But Hirschi looked like he was going to be really exciting for a while.
He was exciting for a year.
And now he's not.
Well, he's all right, isn't he? Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
But UAE were very good today, although they were very lucky, I think.
Yes, well, Remco's team, yeah, what was pleasing about them was that they did, I think, what we wanted them to do, which was keep four of their riders on GC.
Yes.
Because if they'd just gone, we're all about Almeida, that would have been boring. But I think it's really exciting that they've got all these guys who could win Paris-Nice, including one guy who's won Paris-Nice. Although Soler must have lost a bit of time today, I think.
Yeah, he did that final pull with like 500 metres to go, yeah.
But he probably didn't lose a huge amount. It's probably like 10 seconds.
He's going to be first on the front, slogging away, bouncing away on the front in the hills.
Probably not. Probably just attack, wouldn't he, knowing Marc Soler?
Yeah, true. I'm glad you see it like that, because I thought you might see it as being very boring and classic blame time trial for a boring result.
No, I just thought, I do like team time trials, actually, because I think there are more random factors involved. There are more, and especially with the new rules, and a course like today's with the two climbs at
Explain the new rule for listeners, because I'd forgotten about this before the start.
It's a really good job I reminded you, because otherwise
I'd have been like, why?
Where are they? Just
every team, like idiots.
Every team's fallen apart. Like that.
What are they doing?
So explain the new rule. The new rule is that...
It's first rider...
You described it as like, oh, so actually team time was just like a road race without any other teams on the road.
Yeah, so each team's in its own road race. And it's and they're essentially just doing a lead out. And
they got a 26-kilometre lead out for a climber.
Yeah, and that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Unless you've got lots of climbers, in which case you want them all to win or something. I don't know. So, but basically, instead of the time being taken from the fourth rider across the line... It's the first rider across the line. So if you've got a team like Ineos, where only one rider's GC standing matters, then it's all in for Bernal. Put him in a position, get him, deliver him to 500 meters, 300 meters to go in the fastest possible time with the fastest, whichever is the most efficient number of riders to do that, given the parkour.
Which they got wrong today.
Which they totally got wrong today. Mm-hmm. And then let him chin off the front and get his fastest possible time. That's the kind of... So it's there, I think, the ruling... Slightly to what is it there to do? It's there to
make it more exciting.
Yes, but also to mitigate a little bit against the Quintana effect. So the Quintana effect being Quintana's Tour de France back 10 years ago was sunk by stage four every year.
Mm-hmm.
Stage four, stage five, team time trial. Yeah, and that was it. Tour de France over because Movistar lost a minute 25 seconds every single year. That's the Quintana effect. So if you've, because Quintana...
I'm waiting for this, so I don't know how you're going to explain your way out of this one.
So Quintana had a terrible team time trial team back in the day. Movistar...
What difference does it make if it's one rider or the fourth rider then? If you had a terrible team time trial team?
A bit. Makes a tiny difference. Seconds.
Doesn't make it.
You can win or lose the Tour de France by seconds.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, it doesn't make
any
sense.
So what's the rule change for?
I think just to make it just more interesting. Because then
to fill a podcast mini topic.
Because teams have to come up with, we can discuss their tactics a bit more. It's not just a case of they've got to get four riders to the finish. It's like today with the Ineos Grenadiers, Josh Tarling, hard first half. You were on time trialing, like expert, like upper echelon, masterful.
Thank you, David.
Knowledge today.
I was world class. You were aerodynamics yesterday.
Yeah, you were. You were brilliant. Yeah. But you were already saying way before, what are they going to do? Josh Tarling's not going to make it over those climbs. What are they going to do? And yeah. I was like, of course he's going to make it over those climbs.
They were a bit harder than we thought.
Very hard. Well, they had to slow the whole team time to keep him to get over the second climb. Yeah. And he clearly didn't recover because there was no benefit of having him in the final.
Yeah.
So they should have just like spat him out. Like a few teams did. Bora Hansgrohe did way too much.
They spat too much out.
They spat like four riders
spitty.
Out.
Yeah.
Spitty. Like
they were very spitty. Very spitty.
Like projectile vomited over 50% of their team out.
There's Marco Haller. Oh, Danny Van Poppel.
Primoz just on the front.
Yeah.
Oops. Sorry, guys. You're going to have to improve.
They were super spitty. Oh, what's this? The Classement d'Étape. GC will come up on the screen soon and then we can see who's... we know who's leading anyway.
We can ask our listeners now what we didn't want to do before on Twitter because we couldn't. What? Be bothered to find out
what's
New Zealand's track record in leadership of big races.
Yes. Well, so George Bennett has won a general classification, not in Europe, but he has won, and might have been World Tour actually. He won the Tour of California in 2017. Was that a World Tour race? It was, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah.
So he has won a World Tour GC.
Oh. And that's
George Bennett.
That's it.
But never a French race.
No.
So this is uncharted territory for New Zealand racing. They're really good trackies, aren't they? They've always been good trackies.
Yeah.
But
I remember in Hong Kong in the 1990s when I started racing, and there was a big hubbub because this guy called Graham Miller was coming to race in a Hong Kong crit, and he was like at Commonwealth Games.
Was he Miller or Millar?
Miller.
Miller, okay.
Miller had a big moustache. And he'd raced the Commonwealth Games in like 1988 or something.
Yeah.
And that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's my New Zealand story. That's the pedigree of their riders. Graham Miller and was like a hero.
Yeah.
And he'd done the Commie Games once in the 1980s. That's where they were in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. So really it's just been a phenomenon of the last 10, 15 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you had some Kiwi teammates.
Jack Bauer, Julian Dean. Kiwi guy. We call Julian Dean.
Yeah.
Random guy.
Random guy. Wasn't he quite...
Random.
Quite random, but also quite aggro? Like quite...
Super aggro. Well,
was he on the same team as Robbie Hunter with you?
Yes.
Oh my God, you had Julian Dean and Robbie Hunter on the same team.
We had a dream team. Yeah, don't mess with us. Yeah, Julian was brilliant because he'd be the most aloof, kind of grumpy, just sort of had this scowl on his face all the time. Mm. But then, like literally, if you had half a beer,
yep,
it was like... A switch flicked and he turned into the most amenable, chatty, curious.
How weird.
Went the interesting wrong way. Human
went the
being.
Went the wrong way.
And kind and like just and generous and thoughtful. I mean, half a beer. And it was just like, whoa, random guy. So you go from Kiwi guy to random guy because everyone would just be like, where's Kiwi guy gone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would Hunter be like after half a beer? Robbie Hunter.
Yeah, he was just that.
Super
that was
psycho.
Just turbo. It was just, basically trying to kind of protect you when there was nothing to be protected by for, you know, one of those ones where it's like going around just kind of keeping an eye on stuff. Shane Sutton, like, you know, just making sure that you weren't going to get bothered by anybody when and creating bothersome behavior. Good old Robbie, he's mental. Yeah.
Oh my God, on the same team at the same time. Julian Dean was, of course, memorable for that Mark Renshaw. Was it Mike Julian Dean, wasn't it?
Yes, where they came.
Mark Renshaw like headbutted him 17 times or something in the finale and then got disqualified.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember there being a I was quite, you know, it's only my third or fourth tour, I think, you know, when that happened. I can't remember what year it was. Cav was on the race. Mm. That must have been 2008-09 or something like that, actually. So maybe it was my sixth tour. But anyway, I still didn't get cycling really, and I could not believe there was even a discussion about whether Renshaw should be relegated or not. And all the people who knew cycling were going, actually, it's extremely safe. Yeah. You know, it's the safest way of what?
I remember that evening Cavendish was just messaging and calling me and kind of just going, you did nothing wrong, Dave. Like, come on, man, Farah,
ich bin.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, there we go. So that's, who's that? Brandon McNulty.
What?
It's not Finn Fisher Black. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
I feel a bit of re-commentary.
Yeah.
Better. Why is it Finn Fisher Black cross around? It wasn't Brandon McNulty, was it?
No.
I remember that shot of him coming around in third place.
Oh, it was McNulty across the line.
Oh, so he's got bonuses. So he's ahead of them in the on the GC.
Oh, the first day when Jorgensen.
Yeah.
Took that, but he was third.
Too much going on. See, simple race, the race of truth. And I've turned it into the race of deceit.
It's the race of deceit.
So Finn Fisher Black. So Brandon McNulty leads Perrin. He's not Finn Fisher Black.
New Zealand robbed again.
Robbed again.
Yeah.
Who's that? Pity.
Pity.
Lawrence Pity. And I called Lawrence it, Pity. I actually called, cause you
I know.
So that in my head, I said Pity.
Like
in
Tim
the
Pitcock.
Redo yeah.
Tim Pitcock, Lawrence Pity.
Tom, what's his name? Tom Pidcock.
Tom Pidcock.
Yeah. Tim Podkick.
Yeah.
That was Marcel Kittel who messed with our heads over that.
Bastard.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Oh my God. That wasn't, yeah, this has been a day to forget in terms of commentary. Not least because I wasn't able to get all my stats about Auxerre Cathedral.
I tell a stat about the Auxerre football manager.
Giroud.
Yeah.
Dyes his hair.
Well, that's not the interesting one though.
It's a fact. He's the guy's very nearly 90 years old.
Yeah.
And if you look at a picture of him, he's got, you know Jeff Canet?
Like Rolling Stones.
You know Jeff Canet?
Yeah.
The French journalist.
Oh, I know Jeff.
I have a suspicion that Jeff Canet died. Just a suspicion that Jeff might dabble with the old hair dye. Yeah, and maybe it's a French thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff's nowhere near as old as Giroud, who's as old as the hills. But he dyes his hair quite substantially, I think. But anyway, he's this legend of French football management. Auxerre are, I guess, they're a kind of Nottingham Forest style team. In the sense that they're not a kind of like, they've achieved great things, but they're not a super massive club from a super massive place. Okay. But they're historic. And Giroud first started to manage them in 1961 to 1962. Okay. Wow. And then he was sacked. So short tenure. Mm-hmm. They rehired in 1962, right? Later on that year. Oh, sorry, 1964. 2 years later, they got him back. Mm-hmm. Said, have another go, mate. This time, he comes in and he manages them from 1964 until the year 2000.
What? 36 years?
He did 36 uninterrupted years. Took them up to the first division, won the French League and the French Cup twice in those 36 years.
Wow.
And then said, I'm done. I think I've done my bit, yeah, for you guys. And he walked off 6 months later, he was back in the job. Because whatever the poor guy who came next, like David Moyes when he came after Alex Ferguson, but on steroids this time, you know, just made a mess of it. So Guy went, oh, I have to come back now and save the day again. But he didn't just come back for 6 months and then walk off again. He came back for 5 years.
What?
He managed the team for another 5 years in 2000, 2005. Won the French Cup twice more. Whoa. And then went, right, now are you happy?
Wow.
Having managed them for over 40 years in total.
That's
like,
amazing.
At the time, it was more than half of their entire existence that he had been like, like the Henri Desgrange of you know, because Desgrange was disproportionately in charge of the Tour de France for so long.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. And the race started from their stadium today and finished very close to the cathedral, which I can tell you about
as well. Yes, please, yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks, David. The cathedral is an example of Burgundian Gothic. So there's not just Gothic isn't Gothic. Like
what's
Gothic
Burgundian?
From Burgundy.
I've never heard the word Burgundian. I mean, it does make, obviously, it's that's completely obvious after you said it.
So learn stuff like that. Well, from Burgundy, yes. Yeah, a particular style of Gothic. Don't ask me exactly what defines or differentiates Burgundian Gothic from, because it was built. It took so long to build Auxerre Cathedral, over 300 years, that actually it went through several different styles of Gothic. and ended up being flamboyant Gothic, which is also a thing. And I think if you were to choose a Gothic, you'd probably be
more flamboyant
than Burgundian.
I'd be all over flamboyant Gothic. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, they started building it in the 13th century, so in the 12th something or other. And it was the personal project of a local aristocrat. And he put all of his family's vast wealth into building the cathedral, to the extent that he ran out of money, and the project then ran out of money.
Brilliant.
Until his death. And then it stalled, and then someone else took it up, and they ran out of money. And it took 300 years to complete. And even then, it wasn't complete. Because if you look at it, it's got this colossal Gothic square north tower that overshadows it. And it was supposed to have, on the other side of the church, a south tower. Never got built.
Yeah, no.
They just go unfinished. It's work in progress, like so many of those cathedrals are actually. Mm. Or you get like is it Amiens Cathedral or Arras or one of those that has completely mismatching towers that like they were supposed to be symmetrical initially, but the next guy came along with all the money 100 years later went,
"Don't like it.
No, don't like it. Do me own, thanks."
Nice.
Do me own one. So it's a bit like that. and then it was it faces north, south, east, and west, like that, obviously aligned to the compass points. And what's beautiful about it, and why I actually want to go, is it's stained glass. So it's got rose windows, which are those huge circular, very ornate medieval stained glass windows in each of the transepts.
Oh, wow.
North, south, east, and west. And that, some of that stained glass is some of the best in France. And France has the best stained glass in the world. absolutely, bar none.
Fresh. I wish the listeners could just see the sincerity with which I am sincere.
I am sincere.
You lifted a hand and kind
if
of...
If it wasn't such a pain in the ass, because there's always a queue to get in, I urge every... And I'd do it anyway, because it's really worth it. Every visitor to Paris to go and see Sainte-Chapelle, very near Notre Dame. This tiny, tiny little... I must have talked about it before. Tiny Gothic chapel near Notre Dame that's set back from the road. You can't see it from the road. You queue in, and it has got the highest proportion of stained glass per square foot of wall... if that makes sense.
Yes.
So it is mostly glass. So
it's like a greenhouse.
But it's a blue house. So blue stained glass, the colour blue and red were very expensive. Huh. Red, by far the most expensive, but blue was the second one. So it's a sign of opulence that you could then, 13th century glass made out of so much blue. And if you go in on one of those wonderful Parisian spring days where the wind is blowing sort of like across up the Seine, and you've got fluffy white clouds that come, so the sun comes in and goes out. You stand in Sainte-Chapelle, the whole thing pulses. Wow. Like that. When the sun comes out, it just like, you know, kind of like the blue just fills the air, and then kind of it's a wonder. It's an absolute wonder.
Well, there you go.
And so Auxerre Cathedral, which I've known. Tor doesn't go to Auxerre very often, does he?
Never. I can't even remember where I've gone to Auxerre.
Well, you can't remember much. But then you can remember... The weird thing about you is you can remember nothing about some stuff and then loads of stuff about other stuff.
So it's, thanks, Ned.
There's no rhyme or reason or pattern to it.
No, there isn't. It's like I either go down a rabbit hole and go deep down that rabbit hole, or I just step over the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. What can I say?
I don't know. What can you say? Yeah. So should we talk about merch? Because we've got some relevant...
Oh, yeah, we should talk about merch. We've got Matt and Mark here.
Because we have a pressing need, I think, in Never Strays Far, to make money.
Mm.
Yeah. And one of our greatest, I think, means of making money is to exploit our listenership.
I think that's the only way we have.
Because I can tell just by...
Well, we haven't put like a subscription on this or anything.
No, there's no Patreon schmatrian, is there? There's no kind of like...
No, we wouldn't do something as simple as that.
Well, we might.
Yeah, maybe.
If the merch idea falls flat on its face, we might. We don't rule it out. But at the moment, we haven't. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're very grateful to AG1.
Very grateful to AG1.
Yeah.
Who keep us healthy.
They've sponsored us for a year, and we're into the second year of, you know, sporadically running adverts. It's enough, you know, money to do something with. We don't know what we're going to do with
no.
it. But we have a little bit of money in the bank, which is really exciting. But we're so excited by it, we don't dare touch it.
Just
but we're also so excited about it. We want some more.
Yeah, we want to kind of build it. We want to make it grow.
And here's where you come in.
This is where you can help us.
We value our listeners above everything. It's all about you in many
literally
ways.
Literally value.
Never Strays Far. It's all about the listeners.
Yeah.
Money. It's all about the listeners. Mm. And no, listen, we have done merch and they're really good. The bobble hats. Yeah. Brilliant. Are they still available, Mark? Yeah. Okay. So the bobbleheads are brilliant and are still available on the Chapter 3 website.
Yep.
We might. There might
They'll
be a different.
Move it across another. We're going to bobble
and bobble less.
Talk us through what we've got. What have we got available at the moment?
So we've got bobble hats and a non-bobble hat or a fisherman's
beanie.
Bobbleless. A beanie.
T-shirts.
Everyone
loves a t-shirt. Options of t-shirts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And more in the pipeline, I would say.
Well, this is it. So I don't know if we want to do a kind of like listener's appeal, like a little bit. What would you like to see?
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? Like a little bit of feedback?
Yeah, always, I think. I think, I mean...
No, what goes well? What you know?
Hoodie,
what
sweatshirt.
Yeah. And if we were to put some certain sort of catchphrases...
Yes, catchphrases.
From the pod of, you know, down the years, like you, like peeling an orange.
Peeling orange for the OG listeners.
Yeah.
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 There's Pirates.
Pete's Pirate Ship.
Pete's Pirate Ship.
Yeah. The Hay Bales, maybe.
Yeah.
The Roast Chicken Dinner, Fred Wright's grandfather. Yeah. Stuff like that.
Cycling relevant stuff.
I was going to say it was, yeah, Fred Wright's grandfather. It actually wasn't Fred Wright's grandfather, so I can't even claim relevance there. Yeah, I found out subsequently it actually wasn't Fred Wright's grandfather. Anyway, what would go well with
maybe
you
people
guys?
Can send us in some quotes, kind of coming from the listenership of what kind of rings true, and we can see what pops up more often than others.
Yeah, do it's market research in a
market
way.
Research.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Just. Tweet us at Never Strays Far.
Yeah,
with your favourite kind of like lines from. Oh, it'd be awful if nothing comes back. It's a hiding to nothing. Isn't it?
Yeah,
just about one person.
Yeah,
we'll just half-heartedly. So, well, I might. If that happens, I'm going to set up some fake Twitter accounts and just come bombard. Bombard at Never Strays
Far. Market. Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go. Market research.
Lots will come through.
Lots will come through, Matt. Would you like to introduce
me? Oh, yeah. This is Mark Herbert, who I work with at Chapter 3.
Yeah.
General manager of Chapter 3.
General manager?
He hasn't got
a chair. He's sitting on the floor.
That's what he does by my side. Yeah. And Matt Kendall from Retrofuzz, who looks after all our internet email and...
Fantastic.
And it's very good.
Yeah.
And does some design for us as well.
Yeah. And today's a big day for Chapter 3, isn't it? Because
we're going
you're wearing a bit of Chapter 3
Sporting Club Chapter 3. Yeah. This new thing that we're just going to go and tell people about this evening. Go for a run.
Yeah.
And talk about.
I've bailed out.
You bailed out. I know. You brought your running stuff and then you just bailed out.
It's honestly.
Too much sport.
I'm so tired by the time I get here, riding on that clumpy old bike for 15 miles. I just can't face the idea of a 45-minute run, however slow. And it won't be slow because it's going to
be
you.
Slow. No, I'm not setting
pace. You'll be like flipping.
That would not be cool. That would not be Sporting Club vibes if I just went off kind of doing intervals.
Yeah, pay your bill back.
Social sport, this is about. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you guys running?
No.
That's a no.
Oh, no.
And Mark?
We've got something interesting planned.
They've got something interesting planned.
Bike and a photographer, hopefully.
Okay.
So I'm.
Your media duties at the social club, right?
Content creation.
Right. God, it's gonna be a big event.
So we'll see how that goes.
It's pretty exciting. Okay.
Yeah, tell people about the Sporting Club once I got through tonight and see it.
Yeah, and then there's the ride is still to come.
Ride is on Thursday morning from Regent's Park, 7 a.m.
Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Any new romantics going on?
No, actually. Haven't invited any new
romantics. The whole new romantic Regent's Park thing has faded a bit, hasn't it?
It has, hasn't it?
It's a bit 2012, it's a bit Wigo.
It's a bit, kind of late adopter, early dropout.
Yeah,
I don't know what's new.
The new romantics. So Gary Kemp was really at the centre of it. One of the Kemp brothers, Spandau Ballet.
Love, you know. Gary. He's amazing.
A lovely bloke. Yeah, yeah. I interviewed him for a book that I wrote in around about 2012. And when I actually went for a ride with the new romantics around Regent's Park.
Oh, yeah. You said that. Yeah.
And at the end of the interview, I said, "Yeah, cheers, Martin."
Oh, you didn't.
Yeah,
you didn't.
Because Martin was more famous than Gary. Let's be honest.
Oh, Gary wrote all the songs.
Yeah, but. Doesn't matter who wrote them, you know. It's like, Martin was just a slightly bigger. Anyway, I felt terrible about that. Oh. But Martin Fry from ABC, shoot that poisoned arrow. Shoot that poisoned arrow. He was very much there.
And there was a DJ Robert.
Robert Elms, who's still working at BBC Radio London, isn't he? You must have been on his show.
I've never been on Robert Elms.
You've never been on Robert Elms' show? I've been on Robert Elms' show.
Have you?
Twice.
Oh, what?
He used to go out with Sade.
That just rings a bell.
Smooth operator.
Oh, no way.
Smooth operator. I don't think she's part of the
she's not part new of the romantics scene.
But yeah, the new romantics got heavily into cycling. Well, two of them. No, three, if we count Robert Elms. But he was kind of peripheral, wasn't he?
He's lots of different things, isn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't a content creator.
Yeah, he wasn't a content creator. He wasn't an influencer.
So okay, you're using the New Romantics course without the New Romantics.
Exactly, it's everybody's course now. It's people's course.
It's really down to earth.
Yeah. Hey, what, you know we were talking...
Hang on. Why is Finn Fisher Black being interviewed?
White jersey.
I thought I'd be redeemed then. I think they've put the wrong guy in yellow. It's happened.
No, it's obviously ASO.
Yeah, they get
it's not RCS. Right.
Yeah, or the Tour of Britain.
Or the Tour of Britain, yeah.
Do you remember Luke Rowe's story about that?
No, I can't remember.
Don't you? Actually, you remember. He talked about it in the pod. Luke Rowe. You remember when Luke did join us in Manchester?
Yes.
He said that he won a stage where everyone crashed.
Oh, that's right.
At the Tour of Britain, yeah. And they put him in the yellow jersey, even though he wasn't in yellow. And he knew it as well. He'd done the calculation, but the Tour of Britain folk just got it wrong. So he but shamelessly, he just went through that anyway. Yeah, I'll take it. And then overnight, everyone looked at the results and went, "Actually, we put the wrong guy in the yellow jersey."
Oh, that's so good.
You see, it's not just commentators who get it wrong.
I was going to say, actually, because Matt's here, we're talking about junior racing in the UK yesterday.
Yeah,
and Matt's really involved with that.
Oh, you Matt? What's your involvement?
So like most people involved in youth cycling, it's as a sports dad. So I've got two, I'm a cyclist, get my kids into it thinking they can come along whilst I'm doing it, and then sacrifice all of my time for helping them do it. So you get roped into running the club and becoming a coach and doing all of that. So yeah, so we go all around the country doing national youth races. But it's a brilliant scene.
But you've got a big club though. You've got a lot of, it's not just your sons under your wing now, is it?
No, so yeah, I coach the club, so North Cheshire Clarion Juniors. We've got a really good bunch of kids from like age 5 up to age 16, racing cross through winter, road through summer, mountain bike through summer, and kind of helping them find their way in this weird sport. Because it's only when you start dealing with that, you realise how hard a sport it is to get into. You know, everyone rides a bike, so it's super accessible. Until you go, hey, come racing, you need a road bike. Hey, come cyclocross. You need a cross bike. Hey, come to my... Yeah. And then obviously in road, you've got everything like gear restrictions. And it's so complicated to get into.
There's been this big thing, hasn't there, about... There's been this relatively big thing about a call for time trial bikes to be banned from junior races and junior time trials. Because that seems like an eminently sensible thing to do, doesn't it?
Yeah, because the barrier to entry gets so high so quickly. So there's time trial and then there's obviously cross. So like in cross, it's a super grassroots sport held in public parks until all of a sudden, you know, you get into pit bikes and having two of exactly the same bike so you can pit. And you kind of see how... So I'm kind of roughly the same age as David, and I think when we got into cycling, you kind of got whatever kit you were given or handed down.
Yep.
And now, you know, that trickle-down effect that you get has passed all the way through into youth cycling.
Yeah.
So you get kids of like 12, you know, who are on full training programs on...
Yeah.
I remember sending David a picture of some of the bikes at the youth tour, and he's like, that's better than what I had when I rode the tour.
Yeah.
You know, those kids are like 12, 14. Yeah. He's like, couldn't believe
it. Imagine it was with Cofidis, but yeah.
Well, yeah, there is that. Yeah. but yeah, so it's like, and you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't want to just sort of demonize it, because obviously, you know, as a parent, you want your kids to have all the best opportunities, all the best kit.
Yeah. I went the other way as a dad. I wanted my kids to have the worst opportunities and the worst kit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's worked out terribly well. Well, but it was an interesting take on parenthood.
We'll catch up in about 10 years and we'll see if my way went any better. Or, you know.
Oh, that's great. Well, good luck to you. Yeah. Have you got any hitters that are going to be in the Tour de France in 10 years or less?
Yeah.
Three years probably or whatever.
We've had some kids come through who have just kind of graduated, as it were. So Seb Grinley... was national cross champion a few times.
Okay.
He did cross for Trinity over winter.
Oh, right.
You got Albie Jones, who's just made it onto the GB development squad on road as a 15-year-old. And who knows who's next?
Flipping heck.
But yeah, it's amazing to see him progress.
Girls? Is it mostly a male thing? Or?
No, we're really, I mean, by and large, there's slightly less girls in the overall categories. Our club's really good. We've got a really healthy split, so we've got a lot of girls in there as well.
Yeah.
We've also got women coaches, so we make sure we always have women coaches. So it seems like a good sport. Like, whereas football is quite split, it seems, between men and women, cycling's a lot more kind of integrated.
At best, it should be and could be and will be. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. And what's the club called again? So people in the area can...
North Cheshire Clarion Juniors.
There you go.
So we're based out of Warrington, but catch everybody in the northwest.
Very good. Cool. All right. Well, we probably better get going, haven't
we? Yeah. Like, better go for the run. And Sporting club time.
Yeah. Tomorrow might be a more interesting race.
Yeah, it will be, actually.
Yeah. So that's something to look forward to. All right, enjoy the run.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.